It's Friday, September 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, candidates are back on the road to the White House. We'll hear the latest.
It is very serious about dealing with the issues of governance.
Myanmar's Aung San Suu Kyi leaves Washington with stronger relations. Also ahead, Chinese journalists find it tough to cover protests. And a deadly disease becomes the star of a movie. It's all on today's International Edition. Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton is back on the campaign trail after recuperating for 3 days from a bout with pneumonia. But her Republican challenger, Donald Trump, is now questioning her stamina. Clinton's physician, Lisa Bardick, said the Democratic contender underwent a chest scan that revealed she had mild, non-contagious bacterial pneumonia. Bardick added that she is recovering well with antibiotics and rest. The Clinton campaign said it will soon release more information on her medical history. Trump appeared on a television talk show and answered questions about his medical history. Trump's physician, Harold Bornstein, describes him as in excellent physical health, and he says that various tests show results in the normal range. If the 70-year-old Trump wins the November 8th election, he would become the oldest U.S. president, while Clinton would be the second oldest if she won and became the country's first female president. She will turn 69 on October 26th. Clinton spoke Thursday to a rally in North Carolina, the closely contested mid-Atlantic state where both candidates have made numerous campaign appearances. And she spoke of many social issues while lashing out at Trump on the nation's security.
We reject the pessimism that says our standard of living can no longer rise, and that's all there is really left to divide, because frankly, we're looking at an economy now of no growth and redistribution of wealth, and that's not going to work. Everything that is broken today can be fixed.
And that, of course, Donald Trump speaking at the New York Economic Club before he headed to another battleground state, New Hampshire. Trump vowed to bring at least an average 3.5% annual growth to the U.S. economy, which would be above the seven-decade 3.22% average. And he pledged to create 25 million new jobs over the next decade.
One of the keys to unlocking growth is scaling back years of disastrous regulations, unilaterally imposed by out-of-control bureaucrats. Regulations have grown into a massive job-killing industry.
Trump questioning several aspects of how the economy is managed, while Mrs. Clinton spoke about Trump and also the safety of the United States.
I want to give our kids a safer world. To me, that means a world with strong allies, more friends, fewer enemies, and fewer nuclear weapons. It also means leading the fight against climate change so we can leave our kids a healthy planet. My opponent in this race disagrees with me on every one of these fronts. Just a few days ago, he said that if another country's troops taunted ours, not fired at them, but taunted them, just taunts, he would respond by blowing them out of the water. He would start a war over that.
National political polls continue to show Mr. Trump edging closer to Mrs. Clinton, who was ahead by 8 percentage points in early August. The Real Clear Politics average of polls now shows her with a 1.8-point advantage. A New York CBS Times News poll of likely voters shows her with a 46-44% lead, but the news organization said that in a four-way race with two other candidates, Trump and Clinton were deadlocked at 42% each, with Libertarian Gary Johnson coming in at 8% and Green Party candidate Jill Stein at 4%. Well, it's time now for us to check out what's trending online. With International Edition's G. Abby Lee, she's right here in Studio 22 to discuss the trending topics, hashtags, and a whole lot more. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. Let's start with a domestic story trending at this hour. An American celebrity expressed her frustration with whom she considered as inconsiderate riders on New York subway. That celebrity is TV actress Olivia Wilde, who is expecting her second child. She's on Twitter at Olivia Wilde and sent out this tweet Wednesday. NBD, that means no big deal. Able-bodied subway riders who won't give up their seat to a giant pregnant woman. I will just stand right next to your head and pray I go into labor. More than 3,000 people like that tweet.
I can't imagine that happening on a New York subway.
I know.
Well, I can feel her frustration through that tweet. What's the reaction like?
Well, I think the number of the likes is pretty high, and women who had similar experiences are leaving replies rooting for her courage to speak up. But some people are saying that there are some medical conditions that don't show, so people who didn't get up for a while may have one of those, you know, conditions that you can't really tell.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, this year, the Chinese Mid-Autumn Festival fell on September 15th. That was, of course, Thursday. What are people saying about that online?
Jim, the biggest story about the Mid-Autumn Festival, which is also known as a Mooncake Festival, is something that you told me earlier today, which is from Alibaba. The Chinese e-commerce giant fired four engineers who allegedly rigged the company's mooncake giveaway. You bet neither the Alibaba.com or Alibaba group account tweeted about this, at least not yet, but media outlets are having a field day with this. Also trending online is the 8th anniversary of Lehman Brothers' collapse, and a lot of its former bankers tweeted they remember it vividly and that the operation could have been summed up as easy money and too much risk. That's all for me today, Jim.
Well, I guess we can celebrate that we don't have such a collapse today with some noon cakes.
That's great.
Thanks for the wrap-up, G. You can follow us on Twitter, on our Twitter stream. That's at @VOA_IE. For International Edition, our individual accounts are at VOA Stevenson and at G. Abby Lee. Among the top headlines currently trending in Asia: protracted Afghan political tensions worry United Nations. Spy Nation film alleges abuse of North Korean asylum seekers. Wing flap found in Tanzania confirmed to be a part of the missing MH370 flight. Tesla investigates fatal crash in China. Former Philippines hitman claims Duterte murdered justice official. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at our voanews.com website and through your smartphone if you happen to be using the VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Myanmar State Councilor and de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi ended her trip to Washington Thursday with meetings with U.S. lawmakers and businessmen, but she appeared to have achieved a major objective in her meeting Wednesday with President Barack Obama at the White House: a pledge to lift economic sanctions against Myanmar, also known as Burma, as a reward for the country's transition to democracy. Southeast Asia expert Vikram Nehru at the Washington-based Carnegie Endowment for International Peace tells VOA's Victor Beatty that the decision to lift most of the sanctions is good news.
One must recognize, however, that President Obama is going to initially have to issue an executive order which terminates all previous executive orders on Myanmar, so that may take a little bit of time. But the bottom line is that once the termination of these sanctions occurs, U.S. companies and indeed other companies who have any relations with the United States will now be free to invest in Myanmar without concern as to whether they're dealing with anybody who's on the specially designated nationals list, or whether they're dealing with companies that earlier had sanctions imposed on them. Just a small caveat to this, there are still sanctions that the United States imposes through other orders, for example, the counter-narcotics orders and so forth, that will remain in place. But all Myanmar-specific sanctions are now going to be lifted. And that is indeed good news for Myanmar and good news for U.S. businesses interested in Myanmar.
Well, there are also some criticisms from rights groups. Human Rights Watch said lifting restrictions on doing business with Burma's military and its corporate enterprises, as well as the friends and cronies who have been enriched by their decades of rule, is not the right thing to do.
I think it should be recognized that the new NLD government, entirely on its own, without any pressure from the outside world, has suspended all new licenses for mining of jade. It has introduced a temporary ban on logging in order to recalibrate its policies towards forestry development and preservation. And it has undertaken many other such steps which basically indicate that it is very serious about dealing with the issues of governance with respect to mining and resource extraction. In addition, it's also important to recognize that the current NLD government has continued with the initiative of the previous government on working towards becoming a full-fledged signatory of the enhanced environmental transparency provisions. This also demonstrates how serious they are with respect to managing resources which come from resource extraction.
Does the military still have great influence in the business of the country?
The military has influence over business in the country, but that influence is waning.
He said the privileges and monopolies once enjoyed by the country's military-controlled enterprises have been removed, and as prosperity increases, the share of those enterprises in the economy will decline. He said so far the military has decided to go along with the country's transformation, but cautions that Myanmar's long-running and deep divisions will prolong the process of change. Journalists from Hong Kong say they were beaten and detained by Chinese police while attempting to cover the violent crackdown on protesters in the small fishing village of Wuhan. Two newspapers, the South China Morning Post and Mingpao, said their employees were assaulted and subsequently detained late Wednesday while attempting to interview villagers about the protest. Ma Qingting is a member of the China Concerns Committee of the Hong Kong Journalists Association and described the assault against the reporters to International Edition host Sarah Williams.
I heard that there were about 30 to 40 policemen rush into the home of villagers where the reporters stayed, and the policemen claimed that they received complaint of alleged theft, so they have to rush in and catch the criminal. But of course it is only an excuse, because those reporters were accepted by the villagers, who want the reporters cover the confrontation between the policemen and the villagers so that their voice can be heard. So there is no report whatsoever about alleged theft. It was an excuse used by the policemen. And even though the reporter had not struggled back, they were violently beaten or pressed down on the ground on the floor and then were taken away violently. Almost, you know, several policemen picking up a reporter and then taking them away and put them under custody for several hours. And they were released at only around 3 o'clock in the morning of Thursday.
Have their news organizations protested their treatment? Do you know that?
I read that those reporters included reporters from Mingpao, South China Morning Post, and Web newspaper, Hong Kong 01, and I only read that the Mingpao have issued a protest statement condemning that the authorities violently pumping on press freedom. And the other would like to keep a more low profile, but this is not a thing that can be kept low profile. So Hong Kong Journalists Association and Get in Hands with several other media-related groups issue a joint statement strongly condemns the Chinese public security officers' violent treatment against the Hong Kong journalists.
Has there been any response from the Chinese government or from the police in Wuhan to those protests?
As usual, they will not respond to the condemn of the outside authorities. And as usual, we do not heard anything from the policemen in China. But more important is that the Hong Kong government and the Chinese Liaison Office in Hong Kong should do their part to relay the protests of the Hong Kong media circle to the mainland authorities so as to keep the interests of Hong Kong people as well as the mainland people. Because, I mean, the suppression of the violent attack on journalists is an attack on press freedom. This is for sure. And the most important thing during the discussion or the warning of the policemen against the reporters is that they have the reporters, the Hong Kong reporters, were forced to sign a kind of memorandum that they will not illegally covering news in Wuhan.
Ma Yin-ting is a member of the China Concerns Committee of the Hong Kong Journalists Association. You can visit our website, voanews.com, for more on many of these stories, and follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. While you're online, stop by our Facebook page. It's VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. When Ebola was ravaging West African countries in 2014, doctors in Nigeria managed to stop an outbreak of the deadly disease in just a matter of months. Now, 2 years later, that story is being told on the silver screen. Chris Stein has more from Lagos.
It was a grim moment when the Ebola virus arrived in Lagos, a city of more than 20 million people. Spread through contact with bodily fluids, the virus posed an extreme danger in a city where everything from living to working to taking the bus is done in jam-packed conditions. The Nigerian docudrama 93 Days chronicles the desperate days when doctors and public health officials worked to halt the virus before it could spread across Africa's most populous country. They succeeded. Ebola killed 8 people in Nigeria, a tiny fraction of the more than 11,000 the virus killed across the region. Producer Bolanle Austin-Peters says the movie shows a proud moment in Nigerian history.
It's a success story. It's a story of how Nigerians came together to fight this dreadful disease. And very rarely do we have this kind of beautiful story being told about ourselves.
The movie was filmed in the same neighborhoods and at some of the same clinics used to treat patients during the outbreak. That allowed the filmmakers to recreate a unique level of reality in the movie.
Some of the doctors were actually there and they were acting as consultants on the movie, so that was really good. So we were saying, did we get this right? Was this how it happened? I remember when we did the spraying of the blood, you know, we shot that about 20 times. It was till we got it right, you know, and the doctors kept saying, no, that wasn't how it was, this was how it was.
Besides being Africa's largest city, Lagos is an international transportation hub. If the outbreak wasn't swiftly tamped down, many feared it could spread from Lagos globally. Nigerian health authorities collaborated with organizations like the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control to contain the outbreak. Director Steve Gukas says he hopes viewers will take away the lesson that no country stands alone.
We need to actually pay more attention, take more interest when things happen around the world, and do more to help stop things when they start out burning in different parts of the world. That we need to care more, we need to collaborate more, because the truth is, the way Nigeria was able to defeat Ebola was through shared collaboration. And it wasn't just collaboration of Nigerians.
The movie premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival this month. Gukas says he hopes to distribute 93 Days internationally. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can always find us at our website, voanews.com. We're all over the web. Find us on Facebook at VOA Now and like us while you're there. And be sure to follow all of the latest updates with us through Twitter, our handle at @VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter and our engineer is Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We thank you so much for spending part of your day with us. Come back when you can. We're always here. Have a great day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
In the 30 days between September 15th and October 15th, the United States observes National Hispanic Heritage Month, celebrating the histories, cultures, and contributions of those United States citizens whose ancestors came from Spain, Mexico, the Caribbean, and Central and South America. In 1968, then-President Lyndon B. Johnson, intent on paying tribute to the United States' southern neighbors, proclaimed the week, including September 15th and 16th, to be National Hispanic Heritage Week. The date was specifically chosen because, as stated in the White House proclamation that established the observance, September 15th marks the Independence Day of five South American countries, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, and Costa Rica, and September 16th is Mexico's Independence Day. 20 years later, President Ronald Reagan extended the observance to cover the 30-day period from September 15th to October 15th. People of Hispanic heritage have had a profound influence on the United States, contributing significantly to its development. In 1565, long before any other European set foot on what is today the continental United States, the first Spanish settlers built Fort St. Augustine in northern Florida. Today, St. Augustine is still a thriving town, the country's oldest continually occupied city. In the West, a string of missions along California's coast grew into some of the world's great cities, from San Diego and Los Angeles in the South to Sacramento and San Francisco in the North. And in the Southwest, Mexican vaqueros herded cattle across the great grass plains north of the Rio Grande over two centuries before the first Texas cowboys began their cross-country cattle drives. Hispanics have served honorably in our armed forces, defending the values we hold dear. They have transformed industries with new, innovative ideas, and they have led and inspired movements that have made our nation more equal and more just, wrote President Barack Obama. From those with roots that trace back generations to those who have just set out in pursuit of the promise of America, they have come to represent the spirit of our nation. That, with hard work, you can build a better life for yourself and a better future for your children.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Thank you.